Welcome to the MedTech Talent Lab, the number one catalyst for advancing careers and building high-performance teams. Sponsored by the Anthony Michael Group, helping companies secure in-demand talent in regulatory affairs, quality, clinical, engineering, R&D, and other areas for medical device, digital health, diagnostics, and other organizations across the U.S. life sciences sector. Here's your host, Mitch Robbins.
All right, welcome back to another episode here on the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Robbins, the founder and managing director here at the Anthony Michael Group, building teams and careers across the industry. I'm really glad this is a long time coming, this episode. I'm here with Mr. Jeff Gensler, who's going to talk to us about something called Frame by Frame today as it relates to manufacturing facilities and how it's really going to change the way you think about manufacturing and process. And I can't wait to get into it. But quick backstory on Jeff. Jeff has been in this industry for well over 20 years. He's worked across class one, two, three devices. He has a significant amount of experience in quality assurance and also regulatory affairs. He's worked on anything from, 483s and warning letters to helping actually get devices approved. He spent time with Zimmer for 6-7 years, I think, Zimmer Biomet, left as the VP of quality. And like I mentioned, is now leading quality for Condeva Drug Delivery Systems, which is a powerhouse in the CDMO space, helping with anything from analytical support all the way to hardcore contract manufacturing. So we're going to dig in today. But without further ado, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. Glad to be here.
I am. I'm really honored to have you. I got a lot of respect for not only you and what you've done with your career, but man, you and some other folks that you're tied in with are really being mavericks and pioneering something super new, super innovative, and I couldn't wait to get you on the show and talk about it. If you would, because you're the expert, I'm definitely not, I kind of gave a hint, frame by frame is what it's termed. Can you explain to us really what frame by frame is and what we're going to be talking about here today?
Yeah, frame by frame is a novel way of looking at processes. It really changes the way that we have historically looked at processes from process development all the way through managing our processes. So it's really a unique way of doing that. And, I think if we look across industry, we've been doing it the same way for years and years. And this is really kind of one of the first new ways to look at it. So it's really a great approach, and it gives us more process insight than we've ever had.
So no pun intended, but frame by frame, let's break this down frame by frame. First of all, where did this idea even come from? Because I think it takes somebody bold in the first place to say, hey, man, we don't need to do it like we've always done it. There's a better way. Where did this come from?
No, great question, Mitch. So it really came from, about 4 years ago, we were divested from Pfizer, and we were bought by a private equity company. And the first step with the private equity company was to look at building a new facility. So we looked at building a new facility in St. Louis, Missouri here, and we wanted it to be state-of-the-art. It's going to be a sterile fill and finish facility. So we're leveraging isolator technology across the board. We're looking at industry 4.0 across the board, paper-free, no paper, end-to-end, EBR, electronic logbook, electronic lab notebook. So as we progressed towards that vision, about 2 years ago, I was at a PDA FDA conference in Washington, D.C., and Moderna actually presented on a concept, and they presented, that was the first time I saw frame by frame. But the concept was really, looking at the process and breaking it down to individual steps, but then also using AI to automatically generate the procedures and leveraging AI to create the training as well. And when they presented, they was a very small process, very narrow process. And they presented that, what would typically take them 500 hours to develop, they did it in 50 hours or 10 hours. So substantial time savings there.
I want to stop you there and emphasize that. You said 500 hours down to 10?
Down to 10 hours. Yeah.
Unreal.
So when I saw that, you know, I was playing it across the board, trying to think about all the processes that we had to create in this new facility. And I thought it was a really great opportunity to leverage this technology and, you know, and really use it in an end-to-end process in a, you know, brand new facility. So I reached out, immediately reached out to the developer of the process. Sebastian Scheller is his name, with a company called Interspace. And, you know, he walked me through what they were doing, and we began to partner on this process. He really saw it as a unique opportunity to get in to a process that was full end-to-end in aseptic filling, and to leverage that, you know, our greenfield experience and process for his technology as well. So that's what kind of kicked it off and started this process.
That's awesome. And so let's try and be as specific as we possibly can for the audience. Sure. When you talk about process and process development, what type of processes are we referring to?
Yeah. So for us, in the new facility was really aseptic processing. So aseptic, sterile, fill and finish is what we were looking at. And that's what we're starting with. These are isolator equipment, and they're the sterile filling process.
And so this idea of frame by frame, what's the logistics behind it? How does it work? What do you actually do to implement something like this?
Yeah. No, great question. So, you know, when you think about kind of how we have traditionally looked at process development, right? We would typically go out, design a piece of equipment, look at what a process would be, and then process kind of becomes secondary in nature. So what we end up doing is we, you know, go out, spec out a new piece of equipment, perform FAT, SAT, bring it in, validate it, and then we kind of develop the process, you know, at that time. So what this does, it really forces us to look at the process a lot earlier in the process. So what we're doing is we're actually developing the process at FAT. And then what we're doing is actually videotaping that process at FAT. And then from that videotape, we break each step down into micro steps. And then each micro step then gets risk assessed. So now you have end up with a video of the process, and you then over top of it, you're playing a run chart of risk across the top. So you can actually watch the process and see the actual risk as the process is flowing through the process.
Unreal. Unreal. And so why, other than the time savings, when you've heard about this, I guess my question is twofold. What were you most excited about when you saw this, other than time savings? And what was your concern when you first heard about it?
Yeah. So When I first heard about it at PDA, FDA, I was a little skeptical. You know, AI was kind of this topic of, it was a little black box to me. I didn't really understand it. But once I understood what this process really was, it was very exciting to me, because you could actually get a better understanding of the process and see the process at the core level. Like, we've never really seen it before, you know, that in combination with forcing us to look at it early in the process really was a huge benefit for us.
When you brought this back to your team, were there similar skepticisms that you were faced with as far as other folks who you're good. Were you faced with similar skepticism internally as far as why should we even go down this road, or what if we go down this road and waste our time, or anything like that?
You know, I think When I sat down with Sebastian and saw the process end to end and saw the value of the process and how you can really understand your process, it became very obvious to me. And then, you know, from that point forward, that proposition kind of builds on itself. And once somebody sees what we're doing and the difference in what we used to do versus now as far as process development, but also risk assessment. And you think about, you know, when we create PFMEAs today, we have a group of engineers that are sitting in a room talking about risk, right? And it's talking about a process that typically has not even been developed yet. And it's very, I would say, SME dependent and very you know, dependent on the people that are performing it and their experience. And then, you know, it's not specific to the individual process. So by doing that, I think it really changes the way we look at risk as well, because we're actually can see the process and then look at and quantify the risk based on that visual process. And this is something that we've never had before. So, you know, back to your question, you know, once people saw the value that that brought, you know, they were quickly on board and really understood the value that we were bringing here.
And so just listening to you, you know, I'm not an expert, technical expert. I'm kind of listening as a layperson, based on, you know, what I do know about quality building teams and careers. But it sounds like an unbelievable way to standardize process and really take out some of the possibly a lot of errors based on what you said, that it's subject to the SME who's working on that piece of it.
Right. Yeah. You know, once you have that risk quantified, and, you know, kind of I'll play it forward for you too, Mitch, and maybe I can give you a little more detail of what happens after you. Once you have that risk assessment done, what we do is through the use of AI, we're able to auto-generate the procedure. And the way those procedures get auto-generated is basically taking the hazard and flipping it 180 degrees. So that becomes your auto-generated procedure. You also, as an output of that risk assessment, are able to create a flow chart. And that flow chart actually shows you each step and the risk at each step. What we do is we take it into that flow chart. We take it then into an electronic batch record, and that becomes our batch record. And then our procedure now, once we have our procedure that's 100% risk-based and linked to our risk assessment, then we link that out to training. So then we create training from that too. And we're looking at right now implementing virtual reality training for our high criticality steps as well. So now, you know, back to your point about consistency and then linkage end to end. So the way that that works then is once we have that rolled out, any change that happens, they all stay connected. And staying interconnected is a huge, huge, huge step and a huge improvement that we've had for years. You know, in industry, we typically handle these things as three separate pieces.
Yep.
And then as soon as you launch them into your quality system, they become disconnected. Unless somebody, the human capital piece, has to remember to link them somehow in change management. But a lot of times through change management, they get disconnected. So with this process, it keeps them linked. And the beauty of this process, Mitch, then too, is that, and the time savings, kind of coming back to the time savings, is instead of your SME spending time looking at procedures, how to create risk assessments, they actually are actually just reviewing them, not creating them.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. And I'm sitting here thinking, going to bring up something that's fairly loaded. AI is coming for all of us in one way, shape, or form. My philosophy is those who can figure out how to leverage it to their benefit are going to be just fine. Those who don't think that it's that big of a deal are going to be swallowed up. I got to ask you the obvious question. Given the amount of time savings that AI and standardizing these processes and saving so many human capital hours is doing, how do you see this impacting those who are in charge of, you know, risk? Not necessarily in charge, but doing the work, those who are in charge of documentation, all that. How do you see this changing their jobs?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question. I think as we look at it, especially in the situation we're in, you know, we're a growing company, and we're building out a new technology, a new facility. We're really dependent on SMEs, and you know, those SMEs then become kind of the bottleneck, for lack of a better word, in many of these critical processes. So I think, you know, using the technology, we're able to take them from developers into reviewers. Now they're just reviewing instead of developing. And so what would take them hundreds of hours, they're spending tens of hours reviewing. And, you know, so I think it's, you know, back to your question, I don't think it necessarily is going to eliminate people, but it's going to change the way we maybe our roles. So rather than, you know, and you think about, you know, ChatGPT or those other, you know, other commonly used AI platforms, you know, they do the writing, but, you know, we still have to have the human piece that's connecting, right? And
yep.
The same way with, I think, it's going to drive us more toward making sure that our data is right going in and standardized going in. So that way, you know, what we're looking at is actually meaningful, and then the output becomes more meaningful.
You know, I'm glad you said that. In our business in recruiting, it was that, you know, Monster and all the job boards were going to take over our jobs. We weren't going to be needed. Then it was LinkedIn. Now you're talking about AI is going to take. Nobody's going to ever replace human connection and human oversight. It's just, I don't believe that's ever going to happen. I'm with you as far as how our roles and our responsibilities are probably going to pivot and be augmented by AI. I don't think it's going to erase the human element to it. With regards to this whole process, have you guys implemented this end-to-end in one of your facilities already, or are you still in the process?
Yeah, no, good question. So we have implemented in the first line that we have, and actually the line is in qualification right now. We're looking at going into media fill within the next month, and then submitting probably end of January for submission. So so that'll be the first submission that we have in the new facility. And then we're also then have the next lines that are currently going through FAT, and we're utilizing frame by frame there. We've also in the last couple months now have implemented this in our legacy process. So we have a facility that we manufacture auto injectors here. Our products are our EpiPens, and in that process we have some legacy technology that we are overlaying this new process there. So we've done videotaping of our current process during our last shutdown, and we're going to be rolling that out in our legacy process as well. And I think that's going to be very much a learning process for us, because, you know, we already have our risk assessments and the, you know, what we believe are risks throughout our process. By looking at it through this new lens, I think is going to give us even more information and knowledge about our process to a level that we've never had before.
That's awesome. And what great data for leadership to make strategic decisions from. How long did it take to implement an end-to-end frame-by-frame process in the first go-around that you did?
Yeah, that's a good question. We actually started a little late on the first line. You know, I think from when we look at it to implement it end-to-end, it's probably 4 to 6 months is what we're looking at.
And, okay.
You know, we've done this line in a very accelerated fashion. So, that's what we're looking at right now of implementation, about 4 to 6 months.
In the scheme of things, that's nothing, considering the return that you're getting from that time investment. And how about I'm thinking about from our audience perspective, right? People are listening. We've got individual contributors all the way to the C-suite who listen to the show.
Yeah.
Trying to think of questions that they would be on their mind, especially if this is brand new to the vast majority of folks. What about from a cost perspective? Is it astronomical and you hope for the return on investment based on how you streamline this? Or what's your thoughts on the cost piece?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good question. You know, I think it's like any other investment, right? I think you invest up front and it saves you thousands, hundreds of thousands in the back end. And you think about, you know, again, from our processes, it's a sterile fill finish product. So, you know, once you implement your process, you validate your process, and then you submit a PAS for that process. So you think about that. Once you submit that PAS, you're pretty much locked in that process. So if you have a process that's inefficient or ineffective, it takes a lot to change it, and it costs a lot of money and effort to change that, including, you know, redeveloping the process, revalidating the process, and then a PAS submission. So in our industry, a lot of changes don't get made because of the challenges and the barriers to making those changes.
So it's almost like continuing to put a Band-Aid on it.
Exactly. You suffer with bad processes, and that costs, you know, tons of money throughout the years, right? So it's additive over time. whereas a submission is a single cost, and they're probably hundreds of thousands of dollars for submissions. So yep. What we're able to do, when we model the process at FAT, we're able to drive efficiency through that process. And one of the things that the software also allows us to do is model other ways to perform the process. So we looked at one, and we've been presenting at a couple of the PDA events, and we've modeled this pilot that we've run. But the pilot we ran was a very simple process. It was removing a needle cover from a needle. And we created the original process, and then we looked at it, and based on risk, we were able to identify 9 different versions of a process that we could create. We're able to then look at those different versions, identify the lowest risk version, and then implement that version. So we can implement that version prior to even going into SAT. Now you can run that process in SAT, and then from there, then you've run it twice. Then we go into media fills. We're running it through media fills, and then we go into our PPQ. So by the time you get to PPQ, we've got a process that we think is going to be as close as we've ever been to the right process, lowest risk process, most efficient process. And to me, that's the value proposition, is getting your process right first time. And by using this process, you can do that.
Jeff, as I listen to you, who is this frame-by-frame process not for?
Well, I mean, right now it was originally focused on, aseptic practices. Aseptic is the highest risk process that we have in our industry. And, when we talk about sterility issues, it's certainly one of the highest risks that we have. So I think that's where it's been developed. But, I think as we look at it across the board, I think high-risk processes are going to be probably the near-term focus, but we're also then going to roll this out into our assembly process. So we're a combination device, and as part of our combination device, we're going to roll it into our manufacturing assembly process as well. So, I don't think there's any areas that this wouldn't apply to, or very few, but I think high risks are probably the most attractive, but then going from there, I think it can be rolled out anywhere.
Which is awesome. And I know you've been all over the industry over the last several months, at conferences talking about this. What's the feedback you're getting? What are people saying as they hear what you've done and what you guys have kind of uncovered?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Actually the first time we presented it was at PDA FDA last year. And one of the people on our panel was a guy by the name of Kevin O'Connell. Kevin O'Connell is he's with the Irish Regulatory Authority, and he's one of the authors on ICH9, which is the risk assessment, quality risk assessment process. And after he saw this, he came to me and said, that he thought we were driving a paradigm shift in the way people look at risk. He later then presented as the keynote speaker at that conference, and at the end of his speech, he said that the presentation given by Jeff Gensler and Sebastian Scheller on Frame by Frame is a paradigm shift in the way we look at risk in our industry. So, to hear him say that, to hear a regulator say that, I think it was very, very profound for me, and really, really more, even emphasized more the criticality of what we're doing here and the importance of what we're doing and how we're doing it.
I mean, I'm just so excited of just how cutting edge and game changing this is. I'm just curious though, mindset wise, you heard about Moderna's, you heard about the process. What prompted you, what was the catalyst? You'd be like, we got to figure this out. We got to learn more.
Yeah, no, I think the catalyst was the new facility, and I think, being able to build a facility from Greenfield, you always want to look at kind of how do you drive to the latest technology. I think that somewhere that I've always been a driver in process and data, right? And, I think from that perspective, once I saw how this worked and what was behind this all, that became the huge driver for me. And that's how come I became so passionate about this, and then that's why I brought it back to my leadership team. And I think having a leader that was open to this was an important piece of it, right? So, our CEO, Milton Boyer, you know, started his career as a benchtop chemist. He'd been in pharmaceutical his whole career. So, you know, again, he saw this as a great opportunity too, as well. So, and we really want to be seeing Condeba drug delivery in the industry as driving the latest technology. But, you know, really, when you think about it, all the technology around it, it comes down to the process. And it really comes down to understanding and managing your process. And the better you can do that, you know, the more risk you can take out, and the better not only business, but regulatory and, you know, impact it has.
100%. I think everything in our life, personal and professional, comes down to process.
Yeah.
Literally everything.
Absolutely.
So I think it's the essence and the foundation. What questions do you think we're not talking about here that are possibly on people's minds as they learn about the?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think, you know, I just think it's such a huge shift in the way we do this. And I think even back to the PDA FDA event that I was at, that we introduced it at, right? You know, I think you have an industry that's used to creating PFMEAs, you know, kind of in a room with SMEs sitting around the table, and now to come to something that's more quantifiable. You know, I think there's always also some skepticism around videos, and videos kind of being used against us from regulatory perspective or regulator perspective. So I think there's that risk as well. But, you know, ultimately, I think just the ability to being able to quantify data, quantify risk, quantify why it's a risk, and then being able to also support that years later, you know, and I've been in many audit situations where, you know, I'll pull out a risk document, a PFMEA, DFMEA, and, you know, you read through it and you say, well, why did we choose this risk rating? Well, you know, Jim was here 20 years ago. You know, he did it 20 years ago. We don't really know why. You know, there's been very few situations that we've been able to really, you know, quantify those situations. With the video, with the, you know, the risk assessment we have, we can quantify each individual risk, which is just a huge shift for us.
And it's got to be so much more confidence from an audit perspective. It's like we literally have all our documentation and the confidence behind, like, being able to point specifically to an element of the process, I would think, versus like what you just said, hey, somebody 20 years ago developed this and we've kind of kept it the same, don't know why.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a huge shift and a huge change for us.
That's awesome. Usually we start off by trying to understand the individual that we're talking with. And as we're talking, I'm like, you never spoke about this. So let me stop and first say thank you so much for being here and the value that you're sharing and how you had the backbone to say, hey, this is an opportunity to really change the game and to take the risk to implement the process. And I can't wait to see where this goes. And I'm excited to share this episode with the greater audience. But we can't wrap up without understanding, Jeff, how'd you get into quality in the first place, man? I said at the beginning, you've been in this business over 20 years. How did this all happen?
Yeah, and you know, I always say I don't think most of us in quality don't end up in quality by on purpose, I guess. So no, I am. You know, I've been around a while. You know, I'm you know, from a small town in Wisconsin, Shelbsburg, Wisconsin, 1,500 people. You know, 40 people in my graduating class, so it's a very small town. But you know, I started my career. You know, right away, early on, I started at a company called Marquip in Madison, Wisconsin, and we made, PC boards for, actually making paper making machines. And, you know, early on in my career, I, you know, we had customer returns coming back from the field. And, you know, I was always interested in understanding why they were being returned. And, you know, I would take that information back to our engineers and say, hey, we have a design issue. Let's go back and fix this design issue. So, you know, from there, the quality lead at that site kind of said, you know, kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, Jeff, we want you to kind of lead a reliability effort with Marquip on reliability. So, it's interesting that that's kind of where it all started, and that's where my quality career started. So from there, then I started to kind of work my way up into quality. And then a few years later, that company ran into financial problems, and I had to make a choice on, what my next step was going to be. And I really wanted to get into a regulated industry. And, medical device was really something that seemed interesting because it made products that help you, right? So then I moved over into the medical device type field, the regulated industry, which was a big step for me. And then I kind of worked my way up through small companies. Smaller companies I've learned. Started with a company that we made IV bags and sets. So it really kind of forced me into learning sterility, which is at kind of the core of my quality knowledge, right? Is gamma sterilization, EL sterilization, and, really became foundational in my career. From there, I went to a company called Dentsply, and dental equipment, a big dental equipment company. Worked my way up through there. And then I got in at Dentsply, then I got some more exposure to class 3 devices and pharmaceuticals.
That's awesome.
From there, I went into Zimmer Biomet. I really wanted to get more experience with FDA. And, that's a case of be careful what you wish for. So Zimmer was under warning letter at that time. So we helped get them through warning letter. And then moved into Zimmer Biomet and led the remediation there. It was a $300 million remediation, 1,500 contractors. So I was the vice president of quality for that. I think one of the biggest remediations in industry scene. So that really provided good experience for me. From there, I really wanted to get more critical devices, Again, orthopedics are critical, but they're not really life-saving. Mm-hmm. So I had an opportunity to work with a company called Meridian Medical that made EpiPen. And for me, EpiPen was a great product because it was life-saving. And there's very few products in our industry that are truly, truly people affecting and life-saving. So I came here, and again, I helped to remediate some issues here with the quality system. Got some direct exposure to FDA. We're, EpiPen is emergency use auto injector, so it's 5.9s reliability. So I've gotten experience working with, more of the CDER functions and CDRH, leading reliability efforts, taking what I, learned from Zimmer, implementing it here, and implementing the playbook here. But, as I learned through Zimmer and here, data and processes were at the core of my experience and really what I believe to be important.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you giving that backstory. We're going to wrap up here, Jeff. I want to thank you again for being a valued guest, for all the value shared. I'm going to ask you one last question. What is the best piece of leadership advice you've been given?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I think for me, and I've been thinking about this a lot, and especially in the quality field, I think it's lead with urgency, because I think, a lot of times in quality, we kind of have been kind of known to kind of sit back and wait for questions to come up. And come to us and then deal with the problems. But I think, leading with urgency, we can get in front of those problems. We can get in front of those issues. We can lead from the front. And I think from a quality perspective, that's where we need to be to really make the impact that we need to make.
Love it. And it ties back to the entire topic of today's episode, which is more investment and being proactive up front to save time, money, and headache on the back end. So
great.
Great stuff, man. If it's cool with you, what we'll do in the show notes is put a link to your LinkedIn profile and encourage anybody who's interested to speak with you or to reach out, and then a link to Kendeva for those who want to check out the organization as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the MedTech Talent Lab podcast. For more content-rich episodes, log on to theanthonymichaelgroup.com or subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.